But before, can you lend me your pencil? There were two more papers.
Philosophy of Plato, Protagoras, Session 7, April 26, 1965.
So let's begin. So let me remind you of the context. Protagoras claims to teach virtue or the political art. Socrates doubts whether these things are teachable. Protagoras proves the teachability of virtue by a myth and by a logos. Which logos, however, is part of the myth? More precisely, he proves in this way that all men, and in particular the Athenians, act wisely in regarding virtue as teachable, and the Athenians act wisely in permitting everyone to partake in political deliberation. This we have finished. Now, the point in which we are now engaged is where Protagoras proves that not merely all men, but the outstanding hombres, the good hombres, teach virtue to their sons, contrary to what Socrates had asserted. Now, in the passage which we read at the end of last meeting, up to 325a inclusively, if you have the passage, you tell them on which page it is.
Page 23 in the LLA edition. We were in the middle of that long conditional sentence, just at the mark B.
Yeah, there we begin. Now, only one moment. In the passage which we read last time, Protagoras has shown that the teaching in that virtue which the polis needs embraces three virtues: justice, moderation, and saintliness, and in addition, whether it is the virtue of children, men or women, also three again, as it happens. And this is, teaching takes place above all by punishment. This much we have seen. Now, and this teaching is of course also applied by the outstanding men to their own kids. Now, he becomes more specific in 325b, that is a conclusion of that very long conditional sentence. If this is so, namely if all men must partake of virtue, yes?
If what I am saying be true, good men have their sons taught other things and not this. Do consider how extraordinary their conduct would appear to be.
More literally, how strange, how amazing, how marvelous the good ones would become. He omits here men for a reason which will appear later. He now returns to what the good hombres in particular teach their sons. This doesn't come out clearly in the Greek in the translation, probably. Before he had spoken of children, which means normally, naturally, since men are more interested, or were more interested in their sons in former times than in their daughters, means then ordinarily also sons, but still, the word sons is unmistakable. A child could also refer to a daughter. As Xenophon somewhere says in the Memorabilia, in the speech of Socrates, if a man dies and leaves his sons to educate and his daughters to watch, which implies that the main point regarding daughters is not education but to watch them. But this is only a little joke. The good men surely teach their son this common or universal virtue which is expected of everyone. If they did not, they would believe that virtue arises in a strange, marvelous manner, we can say, by divine gift only. Now let us go on here.
For we have shown that they think virtue capable of ignorance of which does not involve the death penalty. But greater things, of which ignorance may cause death or exile to their children, if these have no training in or knowledge of virtue, aye, confiscation as well as death, and in a word, the ruin of families, those things, I say, they are supposed not to teach them, not to take the utmost care that they should learn. How improbable is this, Socrates?
Now let us stop here. You remember that he opposed Socrates' thesis that men like Pericles had not taken care of the education of their sons in virtue. He refers back to what here he begins to refer back again to what not merely the outstanding men, but human beings in general believe, namely what we know already. They believe that virtue is teachable. Why else do they spank people? We have demonstrated, he says, the first person plural. Now, the demonstration occurs in the myth. It is not I, Protagoras, who is speaking in the myth. That's in a way a common view. Yes, let us go on. Incidentally, here he returns to children, paides in Greek, from the sons of which he has spoken before. Good. That is a kind of return to the more common thing, to universal virtue, as distinguished from that outstanding virtue. Yes?
Education and admonition commence in the first years of childhood, and last to the very end of life. Mother and nurse and father and tutor are vying with one another.
You know, that doesn't become the nurse and the father and the mother and the tutor. Tutor was a slave. And the father himself, this big figure, even he, yes?
And the father himself are vying with one another about the improvement of the child as soon as ever he is able to understand what is being said to him. He cannot say or do anything without their setting forth to him that this is just and that is unjust, this is noble, that is base, this is pious, that is impious, do this and don't do that. And if he
now these are of course great verities, but the question is what brothers makes of them, yes?
And if he willingly obeys, well and good.
No, that's not there. If he willingly obeys, no apodosis. But?
If not, he is straightened by threats and blows, like a piece of bent or warped wood.
Yeah, with threats and spankings. So in other words, silence about any rewards, any candies they might get, but emphasis again on threats and spankings as a major educational device. If we see here that the early training of these kids, sons of great fathers, is chiefly other than the people, other than the father. The father is somehow, the father figure, I believe as they say today, is somehow in the background, but most of the spanking and threatening is done by other people. And you see here this nice three division. Three things that they are taught. The just, that is justice, of course. The noble, or base, that belongs to moderation, according to the scheme here. And finally, the pious, which belongs to saintliness. Yes.
If not, he is at a later stage.
Yeah, you see, now he gives a whole survey of education, and I have no doubt that the historians of education have made, of Greek education, have made the most of this passage. You know, but good. Now, what? That we are not interested in Greek education, we are interested in Protagoras. Yes?
At a later stage, they send him to teachers and enjoin them to see to his manners even more than to his reading and music. And the teachers do
as
they...
Manners is too little. Oikosmia. That is say, decency would be the very least.
Deportment?
Nice deportment. Yeah. Nice deportment. Ois in it. Yes?
See to his good deportment, even more than to his reading and music. And the teachers do as they are asked. And when the boy has learned his letters and is beginning to understand...
He doesn't say nothing of boys. He's still children here all the time. Although he, in this case, they are probably boys. But it is interesting, the change. Yes?
When the child has learned his letters and is beginning to understand what is written, as before he understood only what was spoken, they put into his hands the works of great poets, which he reads sitting on a bench at
the
school.
The good poets. Great poets, that reminds of the great society in contradistinction to the good society. A good poet is a very high praise at that time. Homer is a good poet, because there were also bad poets. Okay?
Of the good poets, which he reads sitting on a bench at school. In these are contained many admonitions.
Yeah. Did it become clear that they compelled them to do so? That's important. Yes, they set them on the... and they compelled them to learn by heart. Yeah?
No, that doesn't come across.
Yeah, that's important. Because most people don't like to learn by heart and have to be compelled to do so. Yes?
Oh, they... He tells us, in these are contained many admonitions and many tales and praises and encomia of ancient famous men.
Of ancient good men, good hombres.
Good hombres, which he is required to learn by heart.
He is compelled.
He is compelled to learn by heart, in order that he may imitate or emulate them and desire to become like them.
Yeah, now this second stage is characterized by concern with oikosmia in Greek, this decent deportment with which the nurse and the people at home are not so much concerned. And this belongs to this nice deportment belongs to the virtue of sophrosyne, of moderation in that broad sense. And this is entrusted to teachers, who of course also use compulsion. But these teachers, however, also praise, as we have seen. Whom? The boys, if they do good? Of course not. They praise the good men of old. This stage of the education is no longer open to all. Not all Athenian citizens learn these things. Protagoras now raises in the level of education. And this will become perfectly clear in the sequel, but not every Athenian got that. Go on.
Then again, the teachers of the lyre take similar care that their young disciple is self-controlled.
That is moderate, so for certainly always, yeah.
Is moderate, and gets into no mischief. And when they have taught him the use of the lyre, they introduce him to the poems of other good poets.
Yes.
Good poets.
Lyric poets.
Who are the lyric poets.
Yes.
And these they set to music and make their harmonies and rhythms quite familiar to the children's souls.
Again, they compel them.
Compel.
Yeah.
Compel.
T- teaching and learning is painful, as Aristotle in his wisdom says. And since men by nature dislike the painful, especially unreasonable human beings, they must be compelled. And there was a great change in education, which took place when it was felt that learning can be fun. To some extent, yes, but not simply. Yes, good.
In order that they may learn to be more gentle and harmonious and rhythmical, and so more fitted for speech and action, for the life of man in every part has need of harmony and rhythm.
Yes, this is already a much higher stage. The music teachers too teach moderation, i.e. the beautiful, the noble, in contradistinction to the just and the pious. Well, we cannot help thinking here of the education of the soldiers in Plato's Republic, which has the same goal, the goal of the whole education being love, eros of the beautiful, longing for the beautiful, rather than justice as justice. This shines through here. You see, here puts now speaking before acting, contrary to what he had done before. Well, we have observed earlier in 316d to e, the connection between Protagoras and the teachers of music. The Protagoras' group appeared to be like a chorus. You remember that when Socrates saw them first? We approach now, gradually, the peculiar teaching of Protagoras himself, which is, of course, not which a child gets from his nurse or his mother, I mean, and not even from his father. We approach more and more what not every Athenian is taught. You remember, his point was the virtues which he had mentioned every man must possess, and therefore in particular every Athenian. Now, Protagoras, we know, teaches rhetoric, among other things, and therefore he puts teaching first. Decent deportment consists primarily in deed, not in speech, although it has also some consequences regarding speech, but the nice point is that the child is nice, is seen and not heard. And that means action, deed, not speech. But now the emphasis shifts to speech because he's now coming to the higher ranges of education. Yes?
Then they send them to the master of gymnastics in order that their bodies may better minister to the sound mind, and that they may not be compelled through bodily weakness to play the coward in war or on any other occasion. And the more socially influential people are...
Yeah, let us say a little more, those who are most powerful. Yeah. That is better. Yeah.
And the more powerful...
No, and this is being done by those who are most powerful. But the most powerful are the wealthiest.
Yes. The richest are the most powerful.
Yes, and their sons.
And their children begin to their sons.
Yeah.
Begin to go to school soonest and leave off latest.
Yeah, now that is very interesting. Because now we see already clearly the difference in education. And there is not one and the same education in virtue given to all. The difference between the education of the poor and their children and the education of the rich. It is this education, of course, which enables the rich to hold their own in a democracy and to be the leaders. They are being taught a more refined kind of virtue, here indicated by the word moderation, taste, whatever you might call it, the graces of both speech and deed. Now, the conclusion we can draw already here is this, that the virtue taught by Protagoras will not be the one which Zeus has given indiscriminately to all human beings and which is inculcated by spanking. Here there is no longer any reference to compulsion. Although there is an indication of that when they say they are those who go begin earliest to go to teachers and are the latest to get rid of it. There is a certain negative posture toward going to school implied in that. The difference is between Protagoras and these teachers is that his teaching is a pleasure, whereas the other teachers, that their teaching is a kind of burden. We remember the reference to Hippias. Protagoras' potential pupils are, of course, the sons of the wealthy. He takes a honorarium and not that ain't hay what he demands. Now, this leads to a difficulty because, as we know from the Apology 23c, the companions of Socrates also were the sons of the wealthy. And so, therefore, if the eunuch thinks that Socrates was a sophist, there was some external plausibility. Protagoras is surrounded by the sons of the rich. Socrates is surrounded by the sons of the rich. Not so simple. Yes? No?
When they have done with mastics, the city again compels them to learn the laws and live after the pattern which they furnish and not after their own fancies. And just as in learning to write, the writing master first draws lines with a style for the use of the young beginner and gives him the tablet and makes him follow the lines, so the city draws the laws, which were the invention of good lawgivers living in the olden time, and compels the young man to rule and be ruled in accordance with them. He who transgresses them is to be corrected, or, in other words, called to account, which is a term used not only in your country, but also in many others.
Yeah. Well, one should, of course, not translate in your country, in your city. Yeah. That is a slight modernism. Now you see the last stage. Again, compulsion exercised by the laws. But what has he omitted in this long way from the wet nurse to the full-fledged mature citizen who is educated by the laws? Which stage has he omitted?
In his speech.
Exactly. He does not speak of his own teaching. It is enough for him to have indicated where it comes in, somewhere between the last and the stage before the last. The peak is somehow omitted. He returns to that education here, which is common to all, the education supplied by the laws. The comparison of laws with letters is fairly natural. Laws are ordinarily written in a somewhat more advanced society, but more than that, law is essentially by convention, just as letters are. The city is related to the citizens, as the writing teachers are to those who cannot yet write. Now, what would follow from that? That sufficiently advanced people do not need the laws. Now, there is a statement somewhere in Aristotle that the properly trained philosophers would do what reasonable laws prescribe without needing the prescription. The laws themselves if they are good, we see here, are not the work of the citizen body, but the inventions of superior men, who, being the inventors of the laws, they are not yet subject to the laws or trained by them. The art of legislation, which is practiced by these men, the highest part of the political art according to the Gorgias, is infinitely higher than the virtue acquired by obedience to the laws, i.e. ordinary political virtue. Now the question arises is, will Protagoras not rather teach this legislative art rather than the rhetorical art? That remains a question. The poor, the good and old legislators. That is essential, that the good laws must be old. This is in a certain contrast to the critique of antiquity which Protagoras had given in the myth, you know, the savage, imperfect beginnings. And also his critique of the wise men of old, the old sophists, as he calls it, especially the poets, which he gave in 316 AD. So this we must keep in mind. There is a certain quality of antiquity, which virtue of antiquity, which Protagoras, speaking politically, cannot deny. Well, from the point of view of the democracy, of course, these old laws stem from pre-democratic age. And they act therefore as a brake on democracy, just as today, you know, the famous discussion in this country about the original intentions of the framers of the Constitution. And the Constitution, as proper, as written down and as modified by Supreme Court decision, is fundamentally the same problem. Good. Now the conclusion. Human life as a whole is nothing but education in virtue, from the cradle to the grave. And the conclusion?
Seeing that justice calls men to account. Now, when there is all this care about virtue, private and public, why, Socrates, do you still wonder and doubt whether virtue can be taught? Cease to wonder, for it would be far more surprising if it were not teachable.
Yeah. So virtue is teachable, that is now proven. If you deny that virtue is teachable, Socrates, you deny, among other things, the efficacy or worth of laws, a major educational instrument, as we have seen. In that case, you, Socrates, and not I, the stranger sophist, would be the corrupter. Now, the most famous statement of Socrates regarding laws and obedience to the law abidingness is a Crito. It would be good, especially for Mitzheld, to contrast this point here with the statement of Socrates in the Crito. And especially since he does speak in the Crito about the Athenian laws regarding education, but he runs over this subject as if it were a hot iron. He barely mentions it, but he mentions it. In other words, if Socrates says law abidingness is an absolute duty, it means of course also to accept the whole education as supplied by the city as good. Does Socrates believe that? That is a great problem in the Crito and, of course, beyond that. So, now we know it. Education can be taught. But the trouble is that the education which can be taught is not clearly that of that virtue can be taught. But the trouble is that the virtue which can be taught is not necessarily the virtue taught by Protagoras. That is a difficulty. Protagoras has, as it were, tried to muscle in, if you may say so, between the most advanced private teaching in virtue and the most impressive public teaching, namely the laws. We must see whether this comes up. So, this is the end of this second part of Protagoras' long speech. Now, the great difficulty remains.
But why then do the sons of good fathers often turn out ill? I'll tell you.
He admits the fact, you see, that this happens. And he proceeds to give the reason. Yes?
There is nothing very wonderful in this, for if I have been right in what I have been saying, a city can exist only if everyone is an expert in this thing, virtue. If so, and nothing can be truer, then I will further ask you to imagine, as an illustration, some other pursuit or branch of knowledge which may be assumed equally to be the condition of the existence of a state.
So the argument is very strange. Many good fathers have inferior sons. What's the reason? The reason is that everyone must be an expert in virtue. But it's not a good reason, is it? Protagoras doesn't complete his thought. It is, what he implies is that it is impossible that everyone should be a good expert in every pursuit. After all, a shoemaker is an expert in shoemaking, but he may be a very poor shoemaker nevertheless. Now, therefore, all men have to be experts in virtue, but many may very well be poor experts. What they can produce may be comparable to what a very poor, to the shoes which a very poor shoemaker makes. Yes, now he gives an example, he will show it, he will prove it by taking another art. He implies that virtue is an art comparable to this, shoemaking or what have you. The example which he chooses is not shoemaking, but flute playing, as you will see. Will you now read again?
Suppose that there could be no city unless we were all flute players, as far as each had the capacity. Everybody was teaching everybody the art, both in private and public, and reproving the bad player as freely and openly as every man now teaches justice and the laws.
Well, literally, the just and the legal thing. They are and they are not identical. As Aristotle puts it, the lawful things are somehow the just things, meaning the lawful things tend to be the just things, or wish to be the just things, or ought to be the just things, but they are not necessarily identical. But our life proceeds on the premise we would be in a state of constant revolution and anarchy if we did not assume somehow that the legal things are the just things. This is indicated, yes?
Not concealing them as he would conceal the other arts, but imparting them, for all of us profit from each other's justice and virtue. And this is the reason why everyone is so ready to teach anyone the just and the legal things.
Yeah, now let me stop here, perhaps. Take flute play, he says. If there could not be a city without everyone being a flute player of sorts, everyone would instruct everyone else in flute play from dawn to dusk, from the cradle to the grave. i.e. everyone would be a flute player of sorts and a teacher of flute playing at the same time. After all, not every flute player can teach flute playing. Everyone is in fact a just man of sorts and a teacher of justice. more precisely, everyone is more of a teacher of justice than himself just. Because we have seen what is required is only a kind of varnish, a kind of appearance of justice. Everyone teaches everyone else the just and lawful things. He compares these things, he speaks, what did he say? No one conceals them, yeah, no one is envious of them, no one conceals them, as they do regarding the other technemata in Greek, in B1. Now that means literary works of art, artful devices. Justice and the law, they are kind of artful devices. Everyone is necessarily not a just and law-abiding man, strictly speaking, but a knower of them. But a knower of them, and he will tell everybody else. And why? Because everyone is interested in the other fellows being just and law-abiding, don't you see? This is, of course, a slight overstatement, because not everyone is interested in everyone else's being just and law-abiding, because if this were so, there could be no fellow criminals. After all, every criminal has an interest in his fellow criminal not being just and law-abiding. Here Protagoras completes his sanguine picture of society as a moral institution, as an institution of moral education, which is a theme repeated in many speeches on solemn occasions, and it, of course, it has a rudiment of truth. But we must understand the peculiarity of Protagoras' speech. Society, the big institution in moral education, means in Protagoras that what society does is the sufficient cause of virtue. Virtue is entirely due to what now would be called social pressure. And we remember what he said about the sham character of that virtue of which everyone is supposed to partake. This is the only virtue with which he is concerned here as a universal virtue, and this is indeed a strictly social phenomenon. Because everyone has an interest in the justice of the other, a selfish interest, but not in his own. That would lead us beyond society. Yes? Good. Now we come the apodosis of this. Conditional sentence.
Suppose I say that there were the same readiness and liberality among us in teaching one another flute playing. Do you imagine, Socrates, that the sons of good flute players would be more likely to be good than the sons of bad ones? I think not. Their sons grow up to be distinguished or undistinguished according to their own natural capacities as flute players. And the son of a good player would often turn out to be a bad one, and the son of a bad player to be a good one. And all flute players would be good enough in comparison with those who were ignorant.
No, one should say, nevertheless, nevertheless, all would be sufficiently good flute players, compared with complete laymen, and people who do not understand anything of flute playing. Now here he begins to refer to the difference of natures. He had referred before to the difference between the rich and the poor regarding education. Here a more fundamental difference comes to sight. Not all men are equally gifted for flute playing or for virtue. But no man is a mere layman regarding virtue. Now this does not, what did he say in the myth when the question of virtue came up? When Zeus, what did Zeus say? When Hermes asked him regarding what should be done?
Spread it out evenly.
Not quite. all should participate. But he didn't say that all must participate equally. So there is no formal contradiction with the myth. It is only he brings something out which he did not bring out in the myth. Yes?
Except isn't there, there's a contradiction in the sense that it couldn't be strictly compared to an R following the myth, because that...
Yeah, but according to Protagoras, it could. I mean, the question is only that is of course not developed here for very good reasons. Whether abilities you acquire by spanking are not fundamentally different from abilities which can never be acquired by spanking. Yeah? For example, people cannot become good painters by spanking. And this is not, but if we disregard this important difference, if we understand teachability so far wide that it includes also faculties which we acquire by being spanked, then we can say virtue is as teachable as painting. Yeah. Only painting is not demanded of everyone, because what would we do with so many painters? I mean, some of you may have seen the exhibitions in 57th Street from time to time, and will have had similar thoughts. Yeah. Good. I haven't seen them for a long time. I'm sure they are much better now than... Good. Yes.
It's a progress.
Good. So, in other words, here is again, he reminds us of his claim. Just as the difference between the rich and the poor is important for his training, his teaching, the difference between the gifted and the ungifted may be important for Protagoras' teaching. He may be able to teach that level of virtue which is accessible only to the most gifted, for all we know. Yes, now go on, where we left off.
In like manner, I would have you now consider that he who appears to you to be the most unjust of those who have been brought up in laws and society would appear to be a just man and a master of justice if he were to be...
Yeah, a craftsman of justice. Huh? I mean, craftsman only in teaching others, in making them so. Yes?
If he were to be compared with men who had no education, or courts of justice, or laws, or any restraints upon them...
No necessity or compulsion. Hmm. No compulsion, yeah. Whatever. Yeah. Yes.
Which compelled them to practice virtue.
It is in Greek also repeated. So the emphasis is very much on compulsion. Yeah. Yes.
With the savages, for example, whom the poet Pharocrates exhibited on the stage at last year's Lenaean festival. If you were living among men such as the man-haters in his chorus, you would be only too glad to meet with Eurybates and Phrynandus.
Like Dillinger's, you know. Mm. Dillinger of Athens. Or what is the most, what is the number one man now on the list? But these were very famous local criminals, yeah? The other one at least, yeah. Good?
And you would sorrowfully long to revisit the rascality of this part of the world.
Yeah. Now everyone living in civilized society, even the greatest criminal, is just compared with uncivilized men, as presented to the Athenians in a comedy last year. This last year, if one happens to know the date of that comedy, would mean that the dramatic date of the Protagoras would be 421-22, i.e. after Pericles' death, whereas the older, we have seen a passage which presupposes that Pericles was still alive. In other words, Plato is rather indifferent here regarding the precise dramatic date. And in a comedy, naturally because we are so remote from these barbarian things, that we can laugh about it. and can only love about it. Again, this confirms virtue is by human agency, more specifically by nomos. All men are by nature bad, we can say. In the myth, he said, they lived in dispersion, dissociated, as Hobbes would have said. Nature dissociates man. And they owe their goodness entirely to this civilizing process, to this educating process going on the whole day and the whole life. This reminds indeed of Hobbes, and in most of the literature this is simply said, well, that's the same what Hobbes says. But in a way, I mean, if we don't go deeper, it is correct, but still there is a minor difference, I believe. Yes?
Well, Hobbes describes men as having rationally thought out, here, let's have a society.
Yes, yes, that is true, but this has a deeper reason. What induces man to go out of the state of nature?
Self-preservation.
Pardon?
Self-preservation.
Yeah, or fear of violent death. But this fear of violent death, as Hobbes interprets, is practically the same as reason. Yeah, it is a practically same, not theoretical. Because Hobbes says fear includes the fear of fear, and therefore precaution and taking care of the future, in other words, a kind of rationality. But more simply, Hobbes teaches, of course, that there is a natural right, and the right, natural right of self-preservation. Nothing of this kind in Protagoras and his like. This is, I mean, that we must never forget. There are many more differences, but this is the minimum and the most obvious difference which we must never forget. There is no natural right here in for Protagoras. All right is convention. No. Education is, so to speak, omnipotent. Logos, speech, is omnipotent. But not quite. Nature does play a role. In other words, the gifted and ungifted ones, this difference cannot be bridged by speech. Protagoras vindicates here this unsatisfactory sons of the good fathers. They are not as bad as you, Socrates, say. They are angels compared with any uncivilized man. Think of the corrupting influence of Alcibiades, well? What's wrong with that compared with true savagery? So not Protagoras, but Protagoras, but Socrates accuses the Athenians, whereas Protagoras vindicates all these things. We will come back to that later. Yes, we go on here.
So, you are actually living a life of luxury, Socrates.
Yeah, you are spoiled. You are spoiled. You live. You have derive all the benefits from efficient police, and are not even grateful for that. Yes?
You are spoiled, Socrates. And the reason is that all men are teachers of virtue, each one according to his ability. And you say, where are the teachers? You might.
Yeah, now, Socrates' error, according to which virtue is not teachable, because Socrates doesn't know of any teachers of virtue, is due to the fact that all men are teachers of virtue, if to different degrees. Teaching of virtue is so effective that there is no need for special teachers of virtue, and therefore that, but it has of course a very grave implication. If there is no need for special teachers of virtue, what happens?
Protagoras.
Exactly. So Protagoras saws up the limb on which he is sitting. Now, there is an interesting parallel to this passage here in the Apology of Sugalis, 24e to 25a, where Meletos, the accuser of Sugalis, says, everyone in Athens teaches virtue. The only corrupter is Sugalis. But the negative, the one point is the same. Everyone teaches virtue. There's no difficulty. Everything is fundamentally fine. And people like to hear that much better than the opposite. That is a part of human nature. Good. Yes? No?
You might as well
no,
ask.
First filter.
Sorry.
Yeah. Yes? Yes?
You might as well ask, who teaches Greek? For of that too, there will not be any teachers found.
Yeah, no, what? There are as many teachers of virtue as there are teachers of one's mother tongue. And therefore there are no teachers of one's mother tongue. Everyone learns it as a small child. But is there not a slight difference here between speaking one's mother tongue and using it effectively and powerfully in political assemblies? So here is again where Protagoras might come in. While everyone speaks Greek, not everyone speaks Greek effectively, that he might learn from him. Yes?
Or you might ask, who is to teach the sons of our artisans this same art which they have learned of their fathers? The father and his fellow workmen have taught them to the best of their ability.
Is this reference to the best of their ability, or according to the Greek, everyone was able? These are references to, again, to the difference of natures, you know, and therefore the possibilities of a super teacher of the highest degree of virtue. Yes?
But who will carry them further in their arts? And you would certainly have a difficulty, Socrates, in finding a teacher of them. But there would be no difficulty in finding a teacher of those who are wholly deficient. And this is true of virtue or of anything else.
Yeah. Now in the case of the ordinary arts, as distinguished from speaking one's mother tongue, it is not easy that a teacher comes to sight. But it is not impossible, as is in the case of speaking one's mother tongue. For people learn these arts from their fathers or their father's friends. But this is exactly the case of virtue, that they also learn from their fathers and their father's friends. The teachers other than the fathers, that's to say Protagoras, teaches the same thing as the fathers do. Only better. And this, however, is an ambivalent phenomenon. Since he teaches the same things, he cannot be accused of any heterodoxy. Yeah? But since he does it better than the fathers might become envious that their sons prefer Protagoras to them. Yes. Now let us go on.
If a man is better able than we are to promote virtue ever so little, we must be content with the result.
Yeah. So, in other words, one could include this as follows. Protagoras will teach only those not taught by their fathers. Orphans. There was a reference to orphans when he spoke of the sons of Pericles, sons of Cleinias. At any rate, he belongs to those people who help a little bit, only a tiny little bit, toward virtue. So, what's wrong with that? A nice stranger coming and giving on occasion a little bit of advice, preventing such a scoundrel like Alcibiades from committing one of his other impossibilities, what's wrong with them? But on the other hand, Why should one flock to such a man? You want it? So. But, now comes a great but.
A teacher of this sort I believe myself to be.
Of those I believe to be one. Meaning of those who teach a tiny little reader. So that's not much, but now immediately after.
And above all other men.
Aha. Yeah, go on.
Help people attain what is noble and good. And I give my pupils their money.
Now let us first wait here. But I, Protagoras, happen to be the most competent teacher of virtue. Now we see here that's the only occasion where Protagoras speaks in this very long speech of his art. The only one. But in a very limited sense. Or he speaks only of the fact that he teaches the just and the legal things. Something unimpeachable. Now here's a clear contrast with Gorgias, who came into trouble, as you will remember, because he did not say that he teaches the just things. As a theme, and the consequence is this, that the theme of the Protagoras, who says, I'm perfectly normal, I do what everyone thinks, same what everyone else thinks. The theme of the Protagoras is therefore not, how must I live, or ought I to live, namely justly or unjustly, the theme of the Gorgias, but merely, is virtue teachable? Or in a way, what is virtue? Now this is of course connected with the fact that Gorgias was tired, as we remember, while Protagoras, as we have seen and heard, is not tired. You couldn't make such a speech without any notes, of course, if you were tired. And of course, we must also not forget Protagoras' famous candor, which candor is identical with his caution, which also distinguishes him from Gorgias. Yes? So, in other words, I am the teacher of gentlemen. No one comparable to me. Yes?
And I give my pupils their money's worth. And even more, as they themselves confess. And therefore, I have introduced the
following... Now, one second first. Now, since he is... Protagoras is not merely a teacher of justice. He acts justly. He claims less for his services than he should. The just man is a man who demands less than is his due, according to Aristotle in the Ethics. So, I mean, in other words, there is no danger for our friend Hippocrates in associating with such a paragon of justice. Yes?
I have introduced the following mode of payment. When a man has been my pupil, if he so...
Yeah. No, I think if one speaks... simply empirically or phenomenologically, without going into the deeper questions, what distinguishes us, present day men, most obviously on the moral level, on the level of our moral feelings, moral judgment, from the ancients, is our ability to see the moral dignity of which simple men are capable. And I think that is the peculiar character, I believe, of Kant's ethics. Kant was the first great philosopher who, as a his capacity as philosopher, tried to spell that out. Kant obviously had this, that was in a way his most personal moral experience. The genuine respect he felt for very simple people, of whom he has the impression they are much more decent men than he is by their. And I think we all understand that. But I will not go into the question how this great theoretical attempt to spell this out, which is really the substance of Kant's ethics, how this does not lead Kant himself into certain difficulties in the moment, because you cannot leave it at that. You have to take into consideration the substance of the logos. But let us take a very simple consideration. And let us take a very honest poor man, married, children, born room. There's a problem created in the matrimonial life by the fact that there's only one room. And I don't have to labor that point. Now, children exposed to such things are not the same as children not exposed to it. Now let us assume that this isn't, as psychoanalysis today would underline, that this is crucial. I wouldn't say it is crucial, but I would say it's of some importance. Now, children molded by such experiences are less well off morally, if I would say, than children who are not exposed. It has nothing to do with the goodness of the intentions and the ancients thought of it more in this way, especially those who wrote in Athens, where there was a fairly strict rules regarding the conduct of women, where in Sparta it was different, and in Rome also the woman had a somewhat higher position than in Athens. Now, a poor man, his wife must work too. Yeah, I think of simple peasants. They are in public, they are in public. We today, of course, are not aware of it because this kind of equality of the female sex is so taken for granted that we do not perhaps no longer think about it. Yeah, whereas the children must work much earlier. You know, that is also different today. Whereas children of not rich people, but people of a certain equipment, as Aristotle calls it, you know, and there is not this exposedness of the weaker part of the family, of the wife and the children, to the public. And there is also, therefore, a higher degree of supervision, because the ancients were very realistic that without supervision, the weaker part of the human race is not so good as not so good. Yeah? These points have to be considered for a full view. And in Kant, I would say there is an extremism where only the intention and the honesty is seen, and the whole realm of circumstances with their inevitable reaction on the soul are not probably common. We have discussed this, remember, in an earlier seminar on Kant where you were present. This is a question. And I think the foolish thing we can do as citizens of a democracy is simply to say, well, these benighted fascists, there are books of this kind, which is of course absolute nonsense, they weren't fascists, but they did not have certain opportunities based on opportunities which now exist by virtue of an infinitely greater wealth available to men today. And the question is whether this, why we should welcome all the good things which come from this greater wealth, we should also not be blind to the problem created by this greater wealth and this peculiar character of that wealth. That is the point why it is necessary to study that. And even the distinction between higher and lower professions, I believe, is of some importance even today. Take a case which it is somewhat delicate perhaps to mention, that is the status of actors and actresses, which is the only reason.